Hi, I'm David Greer. Welcome to Live Big. This morning, our teaching will be held outside because we are in the process of transitioning into our new campus in Virginia, right outside of DC. We look forward to having you join us there. But until then, let me ask you, how willing are you to fulfill the Lord's will and His purposes? Let's dive into this new series together about Nehemiah, his dilemma, and how the Lord moved to help him prosper. Watch this. All right, Nehemiah 1 and 1. And Nehemiah begins, by the way, I'm going to begin a series in the book of Nehemiah. So next week, we're going to pick up chapter 2. But it begins, the words of Nehemiah, son of Hakaliah. The book of Nehemiah is really an inspired memoir, if you will. Otherwise, we would know very, very little about this man named Nehemiah. He was a cupbearer for the king, King Artaxerxes, by the way. And mostly he was a man that decided enough was enough. And that's really what the book of Nehemiah is about. You know, some changes in your life will not happen until you make them. You could pray about them all you want, but until you take a step of action that stands behind or in concert with your prayers, you're not going to be able to move forward. And it says, and it came to pass in the month of Kislev in the 20th year. This date lets us know that it was roughly about 100 years since the first captives came back from exile. Now, the story here is a little bit complicated, but the children of God, you know, since Moses, had an on-again, off-again relationship with God. It lasted about 1,000 years. So the children of Israel had 1,000 years of God's patience. And over time, what happened is the kingdom got divided into two nations. One was the kingdom of Judah and the other the kingdom of Israel. And today we would liken one to a blue state, if you will, and another to a red state. So the Israelites, or the Jewish people better, were deeply divided. And God finally got fed up with this off and on relationship folks had with him. And he finally allowed, he prophesied that it would happen. The Babylonians, he had them come and destroy Solomon's temple. And they also conquered Jerusalem. And what's the use of a temple if people aren't really worshiping? And you don't want to have so much form, but really not have the substance in the heart of it that God really doesn't, you know, he's not impressed by all he sees and hears. So immediately, as soon as the Babylonians began to as soon as they defeated the Israelites and the Judeans, they immediately began to deport all of the people from that region of the world to Babylon. And the Israelites, or the Jewish people, were passed along a little bit like a soccer ball. Following about 70 years of captivity, so it was a process, and discipline is a process, just like God's blessing often can be a process. So following 70 years of captivity, King Cyrus, who happened to be a Persian king, allowed a small remnant of Jewish people to return to Jerusalem. And those folks began to rebuild and settle the land. And as soon as they got back in, Ezra and those guys started to rebuild the temple. And as they did it, though, their neighbors got jealous and they were offended and upset. It's like how, you know, people in that time, in that era, saw everything in light of the gods, meaning if your tribe was successful, that meant your God was stronger. So when the Israelites began to prosper and build their temple, you know, it caused the neighboring folks who worshiped a different God to feel threatened by that. So opposition arose and a lot of hate went on and just a lot of bad stuff. And it got so intense that the Israelites actually quit. And, you know, for 17 years, they had basically given up. All they did was lay the foundation and build the altar for the temple. And by the way, this temple would be called the Second Temple. So in your Bible, or as you study, the Temple of Solomon was the first temple. But it's in these days, in the days of Ezra, as well as Nehemiah, that they build the Second Temple. And let's pick up again at the verses here. Now we are in the month of Kislev, in the 20th year, as I was in Shushan, the citadel. So we see that Nehemiah not only lived in the capital, he actually lived in the palace of the king. But there are no coincidences with God. He was there for a reason. And you may not know, you know, why you're in the situation that you're in today, but God knows. And I like what St. Augustine said. He said, trust the past to God's mercy, trust the present to God's love, but trust the future to God's plan. And that's what's happening here. Verse 2, the Hananiah, one of the brethren, came with men from Judah. Nehemiah was about 800 miles away from the promised land in a strange land, speaking strange languages, eating strange foods. But even in this super difficult situation, God made him successful even in that place, so successful that Nehemiah lived in the palace. And I've learned in my life, you have to learn to blossom wherever you're planted. And despite though, and this is where the book gets interesting, all of Nehemiah's amazing success, his heart stayed plugged into God enough to still care about where he came from and to care about God's people. So here he is. He's a prominent figure. If you're a cupbearer, you're an advisor to the king. You have access to resources. You're living in a palace. He's living this incredible existence. But he asks a question. He begins to inquire about something. He said, and I asked them concerning the Jews who had escaped. Now, this is important. God will not always, you know, send a burning bush and flashing lights, and angels will not always appear to get our attention. It's really important. If we really love someone, really, really love someone, we're going to inquire daily about what, you know, it takes to bless them or what they would like in order to be blessed. And here we have this man, again, who could have been preoccupied with a status and all the rest. He's concerned about God and God's people. And then he poses some questions. He pokes in to try to find out how he could leverage what God had done for his life for God's people. I asked him concerning the Jews who had escaped. So Nehemiah was concerned about those risk takers. Now, he didn't go to Palestine to return to the land, but he was concerned with those who did have the courage and the opportunity to do that. And I wish that I could say living by faith was easy. I mean, you know, all you got to do is read a few verses and pray in tongues for 5 minutes, and then everything, you know, for the rest of your life is a cakewalk. But there's a time that it will take everything to hold on. And this is what the remnant of those who had returned to the promised land, what we're going through. And I want to encourage you, wherever you are, hold on, because God knows what he's doing. And just because you're dealing with some challenges and things might not be happening on your timeline, maybe you started and stopped, and maybe you started and then there was opposition that you couldn't get past. A zillion things could have happened, but that doesn't mean that God is finished. He said, I asked concerning the Jews who had escaped, who had survived the captivity. Now, these men and women that returned to the land, these were scrappers. I mean, these are folks with a whole lot of grit. They kind of lived in survival mode for 70 years. But the problem is, we can get so preoccupied trying to survive in life, we stop trying to really live our lives. Today, psychologists diagnose something called post-traumatic stress disorder. PTSD is an overactive stress response, if you will, that comes from a real traumatic event or events, plural, but it extends beyond the real danger. And in large measure, this is really what these folks were going through. So this is when you had a moment or a period that was unsafe, but after that moment, everything and everywhere is always unsafe. Your brain kind of goes into overdrive, thinking about analyzing and solving for the what ifs. And, you know, perhaps you were in the Middle East and you were fighting the Taliban, but now you're in a movie theater and you're like, you know what, I got to look for my exits. You know, who's going to come in the door? Your mind is on overdrive because you were in this intense situation and you're having a problem turning it off. And this is what was going on in the lives of God's people that were in the promised land. And Nehemiah was concerned about it. Here he was in the palace. Of course, there's palace intrigue, but it wasn't on the level of what his brothers and sisters were facing. So he's concerned about the people, but he also says here, and concerning the city of Jerusalem. So, you know, after food, water, shelter, you know, the basic biological needs that we have, after that, we need a safe place for us. Safety is vital. We need a safe place to worship, a safe place to live. My hope, by the way, is that Grace Church becomes your Jerusalem, a safe place to grow and develop in a world that has gone absolutely mad. So he prayed for the people, but he also prayed concerning Jerusalem, which was their location. He wanted them to be in a safe place so they can grow and develop and become everything that God wanted them to be. Verse 3, and they said to me, they're giving this report to Nehemiah, the survivors. Okay, this group is called survivors several times here. And the dictionary defines survivors as those who remain alive after others have died. And many of us are survivors. As a matter of fact, all of us, if you're here today on some level, you are a survivor.
Thanks for tuning in to the Live Big broadcast. Right here behind me is the new worship center in Dumfries, Virginia, just outside of Washington, D.C. So be on the lookout for new episodes filmed with state-of-the-art technology. Also, on behalf of Derek Greer Ministries, we would like to thank all of our viewers and partners for your love and support that has enabled Derek Greer Ministries to spread the message of Jesus Christ to millions across the globe.
I want you to think, though, specifically about these people, of the trauma that they had gone through. The government had burned down the temple, but they survived. They had lost their nation and they were sent as captives to a foreign land, but they survived. They tried to rebuild the temple, but opposition arose from every corner. Literally all hell broke loose. Been there, understand that a little bit. But they survived. They gave up on rebuilding the altar for about 17 years, but God didn't give up on them. And finally they completed it and they survived. But finally, they tried to, once they finished the temple, they tried to build a wall around the temple, because in that day and age, if you did not have a wall around your city, you were in a very dangerous situation, because at night raiders would come in, etc. Walls were literally people's protection. That's why David would say things like, "You are my rock, my refuge, my shield." He saw God as his walled city and the place of protection. And walls were super, super important in the ancient world. And they tried to rebuild the walls, but they were unable to. And, everything kept breaking out. Every time they tried to take one step forward, they got knocked 6 or 7 steps backwards. So here they are in the promised land. They do have the temple, but every day, they're trying to survive because at any moment, any group of marauders, there were Bedouins, there were all different types of people that traveled around and attacked and they'd steal your wives, enslave your children, steal your crops and everything you own. It wasn't just a matter of, when I was young, someone might try to steal your sneakers, and that was the big thing. But, they would take everything, including those you love. So it was a very serious situation, and those in Israel were living on pins and needles, if you will. It says the survivors who are left from the captivity in the provinces are there in great, watch this, great what? Great distress. Why were they in distress? Because they were constantly exposed to danger. And over time, when you have that adrenaline constantly flowing in your body, it impacts you in a lot of ways. So these folks were dealing with some post-traumatic stress. Actually, some of it wasn't post, it was current traumatic stress. But then it adds, and reproach. Why were they in reproach or better disgrace? Because it was embarrassing for people to say that we are the people of God, but we're living such a desperate life. We're living hand to mouth, and we've been in this situation for so long. We're not safe. Our children aren't safe, and it's frustrating. And again, I look up to heaven. I worship in the temple, but I don't see God's hand moving the way I'd like in my life. How many have been in the situation of these survivors here? And then it adds, the wall of Jerusalem is also broken down. So again, they worship, but their protection wasn't complete. It was gone and on some parts and at some level. Maybe, you know, you returned to the Lord. Maybe you've come back after straying and all the rest. But when you came back, you didn't feel as safe and as confident as you once did. Your faith wasn't as innocent and wasn't as trusting as it once was. And you're so impacted by what you went through, you know, when God had to deal with your stubbornness and all the rest, that the walls that were in your mind that once easily resisted feelings of inadequacy, it once resisted, you know, fear and panic. Now those walls are weak and you live in constant fear of where the enemy might strike next. It is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the Lord. And these folks had gone through it and they're dealing with all different types of stress on all different types of level, but they want the walls here mirror what they wanted to happen in their spiritual lives. They wanted God to be a wall around them and they didn't want any gaps in the hole. And that's what I want in my life. I want God to build a hedge of protection about me and my family, my church and those I love. And I don't want any gaps in that hole. And just as they were trying to build up this physical wall, it again spoke to what they were trying to accomplish spiritually. And I think all of us on some level are trying to do that. And then it goes on and says, and its gates are burned. So the walls of the city protected against those that might try to, you know, go into the woods and sneak and climb in through, you know, some area where it's just not highly populated. And I don't know if there was a whole lot of woods in Jerusalem. But the point is, the walls of the city are really for those that are sneaking and creeping and that type of thing. But gates, pay attention here, are usually connected to roads. Those are high traffic areas. And gates were used to protect against those who really didn't have a shame about entry. They weren't really trying to sneak in. They felt they had a right or they had the force and power just to come in. And this is important. You can't force someone to respect you. But our gates or the lines that God draws in our lives are those are there so we can refuse to be disrespected. So the gates were there to stop those that Jerusalem or the people of Jerusalem didn't want in. But they didn't have that prerogative anymore. They didn't have the power to stop anyone. And this was the situation of their lives. So it was when I heard these words, when Nehemiah heard that the temple was in trouble, and that God's faithful people, you know, I mean, come on, they risked travel 800 miles to go back to Israel. And they're really living hand to mouth and just all types of dangers that they're facing. When he heard about it, he sat down and watched this. He wept and mourned for many days. Now, here's my big question for you today. Does your heart still break for what breaks God's heart? This man was powerful and successful. And sometimes we can get so successful, so provided for, so powerful. We can reach our goals in life that, you know, it's all about us. But does your heart break for what breaks God's heart? Nehemiah, this powerful man, was still impacted by the heart of God and a love for his people. He said, I was fasting and praying before the God of heaven, not for himself, but for his church, for his temple, for his people. And by the way, the rest of this chapter outlines the prayer, and I'm not going to dig into all that. But what we do find, and you can read this on your own, he prayed the scripture, he quoted God's promises, but most importantly, he was willing to give something up. It started with food. And by the way, when you want something so bad you stop eating, that means you're pretty serious about it. And it's really important though. To stop asking God to care about things that you don't care about and calling that prayer. If you don't really want it, you might formulaically check the box and think you prayed about it, but if it doesn't move your heart, it's not going to move God's heart. Jeremiah tells us in chapter 29, you will seek me and find me, watch this, when you seek me with your whole heart. And I have many times in my life just checked the box to pray a prayer and got no results. And it wasn't till I slowed down and said, you know what, I'm going to really, really talk to the Lord about this. And I'm going to pray with my whole heart, undivided attention. And every time I've done that, God has heard. He didn't always answer the way I wanted exactly, but I left knowing that God heard me. Now, I want you to skip to the end of this prayer, because I'm not going to keep you too long this morning, and I'll pick up this chapter next week. In verse 11, he says, O Lord, I pray, please let your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant. So he poured out his heart to the Lord, and in humility, he's saying, Lord, may you hear what I just said. But he doesn't stop there. He says, and to the prayer of your servants who desire to fear your name. Nehemiah realized that he was not the only one who loved God. He wasn't the only one who cared. And sometimes you can start feeling like, you know, you're the only one that's living faithfully, that cares about the things of God. But Nehemiah didn't have that type of mentality. He recognized that there were others there's always a remnant with God. There's always a remnant. There were others that cared about God's plan, cared about Jerusalem, et cetera. And in that, though, you know, a lot of times we say no one else cares. And because no one else cares, we feel that we don't have to do anything. They don't care. Why should I care? But here he says, you know, I'm not the only one who cares. But he was willing to do whatever his part was. And that's really important. He said, and let your servant prosper this day, I pray. And just a side note here, prosperity is a good Bible word. It has been misused and abused, but prosperity is something you can pray for as long as you're willing to use whatever God prospers you with for his cause and his kingdom. So God had given Nehemiah status. He had given him a favor with the king. He had obviously given him some wealth and riches, etc. But he was willing to lay all that on the line for the cause of the kingdom. So again, God doesn't mind you having as long as you're willing to invest what you have into what God might need it for. And then he says, and grant him mercy in the sight of this man. And it seems a little strange here. He's talking real generic, but he starts then speaking about this specific man. You see, Nehemiah knew that he had access to the answer. He was serving the most powerful king in that part of the world at that time. And he would not shy away from risking his life, his reputation, to get his prayer answered. He knew that he had certain resources, and in this case, it was the king, and he was willing to leverage that resource, and we're going to see this next week, in order for God's purposes to come to pass. There would be no Moses if there was no Pharaoh. There would have been no David without Goliath. There would be no stories about Daniel unless, you know, he was put into the lion's den. And there'd be no Jesus without a cross. And really, there would not be a you without things in your life that have cost. So this is the reality. And the problems that we face in life are actually the things God uses to make us great.
Nehemiah's determination is exactly what the Lord was willing to honor. Nehemiah's heart broke for what broke God's heart. Nehemiah was willing to risk and leverage his riches, his status with the king, and ultimately his life in order for God's purposes to come to pass. He not only prayed with his mouth, but prayed with his life, willing to lay down everything God has given him for the cause of Christ. The Lord wants to see that same fire within us, and rest assured, he will bless it 100-fold. Have you ever thought that somehow God missed your prayers? Or maybe somehow you have missed out on receiving your blessing? If you have ever asked yourself these questions, this is the book for you. And when God stops the lives of 8 hidden figures in the Bible and what they did to get God's special attention is revealed, dig in with Derek Greer as he examines the life of each figure and what they did to get God-sized results from their prayers. If you want to propel your faith to a new level, this book is a must-read for you. Stay right there. Our announcer is coming with more information on how you can get your copy of When God Stops today.
Question. How do you get God to stop for you and give special attention to your situation? What does it take to stand out in the crowd and get God-sized results? Find the answers to these questions and more in Derek Greer's latest book, When God Stops. This one-of-a-kind book highlights 8 hidden figures from the Bible who show us how to dream, think, and live the type of life that God not only notices, but one that he rewards. Not only that, but in this book, Derek Greer shares his personal journey like he never has before, Hear his testimony and go beyond what you see to get the real story behind Derek Greer's most life-changing moments with God. So jumpstart your faith today. Learn how to get God's special attention and see God-sized results in your life. Go to whengodstops.com today. That's whengodstops.com to find out more.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of the Live Big broadcast. Be on the lookout for future teachings in our new state-of-the-art location outside of Washington, D.C. In the meantime, be sure to stay connected with us at Dr. Derek Greer on social media. Also, log on to derekgreer.com to receive additional impactful teachings that are designed to remove barriers that are keeping you from walking in God's best. Our announcer is coming with more information, and until next time, live big.
Connect with Derek Greer Ministries on social media to access Derek Greer's latest teachings and content. Follow on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Also, be sure to subscribe to Derek Greer's YouTube channel at Dr. Derek Greer VA and access his latest teachings and other content meant to power you through the week. While you're there, be sure to hit the notification bell so you don't miss any of Derek Greer's latest Power Pack content. Subscribe today and propel your spiritual life forward.
Derek Greer Ministries is certified by the ECFA. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time on Live Big with Derek Greer.